everyone. This is the CAG Podcast. This episode, we're going to talk about the CAG Clerics of the Empire. Tonight, my co-host...
I'm Javon, and we're back!
We have a special guest this evening from the Clerics of the Empire. Please introduce yourself.
I am Kartan, son of Molnoth. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem.
Just exactly what is the CAG Clerics of the Empire?
this goes back. There's some story here. Well, I guess it goes back to the TNG episode Rightful Heir. That's the episode where Worf, not exactly the most Klingon of Klingons, if you take my meaning, he wanted to get in touch with his roots, his culture and history. And he went to the monastery on the planet Boreth. Now, there's a very specific story that happens there. And, you know, as is typical of Star Trek at the time, it's pretty self-contained and not really that well referenced again. But what it implies is a treasure trove of lore. That monastery was presumably been there for some time, probably since Klingons became warp capable. And it's referenced to as the most sacred location in the Empire. So it's pretty important to the cultural identity of the Klingons. So by inference, we have a religious belief, so to speak. You know, they don't worship deities. It's even stated elsewhere that they had believed in them, but in their belief system, they rebelled against them and slew them all.
We actually talked about Boreth in the last Bound by Honor podcast that we did, because it's one of the places referenced
in the
Klingon Empire book by Dayton Ward.
Later on, I actually have a reading list for everyone to take away.
Oh, nice.
So I would say that, you know, I when I say religion, let's just take that as a translational issue. Think of it more as like Shintoism or something like that. It's philosophy and spirituality, you know, if you will, philosophy.
Mysticism.
There's certainly a belief in the afterlife that the Klingons have, although there's probably some discrepancies in what each individual Klingon believes. Presumably Klingons have a diverse belief system, like just as diverse as humans would have. Atheists, agnostics, and many different denominations of beliefs. Some follow the Kuvama, and others follow Kalas. So that's where the idea comes from.
And as we found out on Star Trek Discovery, there are even followers of Molar.
Ah, that's actually a good point. I didn't have that in my notes, but I did catch that. So there's definitely some sects. Now, we don't want to get too much into direct analogies, you know, getting into things like Christianity versus Satan worship or something like that. But there's definitely what's considered to be mainstream and norm in beliefs, and what's kind of counterculture and opposing. And so that's kind of where I came from with the whole idea that there is this monastery of Boreth. We've seen these clerics in that episode. So surely such a thing had existed before that episode. Things continue to exist after that episode. And that's what I wanted to kind of explore in this area of fandom.
So there's a wealth of culture here, mm-hmm. a wealth of ideas that we just don't normally think of to explore. So I guess the question is this why, or did you have another reason for setting up the Clerics of the Empire?
Well, okay, so there's another story that I would have to go into that gets into that. So when I first joined a Klingon ship, I was asked, you know, what position did I want on the ship? And only half joking, I said, I'd like to be the ship's counselor. Somebody who was very, very staunch in their interpretation of Klingon life and shipboard life and so forth said, well, the Klingons wouldn't have an analogous position to a ship's counselor. And I'm like, I'm not sure that's entirely true. I mean, sure, they might not have somebody in the medical field that dealt with psychology necessarily the way the Fetties would, But we have definitely seen these clerics, you know, on the monastery of Boreth. I don't think it would be that great a stretch to imagine that Klingons would have the equivalent of like a ship's chaplain, you know, that would be that sort of a position. Now, it probably wouldn't be anything like the chaplains we see in the real world military, you know, Father Mulcahy of MASH or whatever, who doesn't carry a gun. He's not in the military, so to speak. He's just there to minister. I think they'd absolutely be soldiers of the Empire, just like their comrades. But they've spent some time at the monastery studying, you know, the teachings of Kalesh and so forth, and bring that kind of wisdom to the crew.
Especially if they're teaching, especially if they're counseling Klingons, Klingon warriors on the ways of Kalesh, which is the way of the warrior, they might even necessarily be drill instructors.
Oh, that's absolutely true. They could very well be, or even the Cas de Vuy of the ground troops or whatever, or, but you know, you figure there's also got to be somebody who, administers the rites and performs the ceremonies. You know, there's the Deep Space Nine episode where we see you're cordially invited, where we see a very formal kind of wedding ceremony. There would need to be somebody who would fill that role of the leader of the ceremony, so to speak.
Of all the ceremonies, yeah.
Sure, and you know, something I don't want to, you know, jump ahead too much, but it's something that I see fandom desiring and possibly I'd even say needing, to have somebody in a sector going to the convention to lead the wedding ceremony or to do the line of pain sticks or whatever for the convention or for a get together of the ship or whatever.
Yeah, that is one of the things we're going to talk about a little later, is trying to do a recreation of some of these ceremonies. What were your goals then for setting this up within CAG?
Well, initially, I didn't have any goals at all. It was just I wanted a position on the ship, and it's kind of what I was kind of starting to do in our area anyway. And in fact, I did end up being asked if I would perform a Klingon vow renewal at a convention, and it became a big centerpiece of that particular convention. They were pretty fired up to have Klingons there doing something, you know, so interesting and something that people wanted to go see. But then I started to think in terms, and I think this is where you might want to be going with it, started thinking about in terms of what can sometimes be a fractured and divided fandom, dealing with issues of canon, which is not anything new to the Klingons. I mean, we've had those kinds of issues going back to, you know, TOS versus TNG and all kinds of things on down the line, role-playing games versus the shows. And now we're getting into some new issues with Discovery. And I just said, wow, you know, if Klingons have a diverse belief system, like humans have a diverse belief system, then there's just as much need for Klingons in fandom to have somebody trying to be non-denominational in helping people to come to some sort of an agreement about what it means to be Klingons and what the way of Kalesh looks like, you know?
But what is your official stance on just you brought it up, so we might as well just.
Oh, absolutely. No, I didn't mean to lead you, but I'm happy to go there. That's a topic, right? Canon. But I feel like it shouldn't be after all these years.
Oh, I agree.
So let's go back. Okay. First thing I want to do, whenever there's a talk about canon, you know, you get people that are fired up. They have their belief, their headcanon of what they think it should be. And then you have the purists that go, well, no, that's not what Gene Roddenberry intended, or no, that's not what this show says. So I take it back to, there's a YouTuber that I very much admire by the name of Professor Geek. And he's got, he's an actual professor, and he talks about storytelling. And he tends to talk about archetypes and mythology and so forth. And whenever you talk about something having to do with canon, you talk about two things, exegesis and eisegesis. It's what you get from the mythology and what you bring to the mythology. So exegesis would be your hard line. If it's not in the scripture, then it's not canon, okay? Or at least what you can take from it, what it specifically says, and what the Apocrypha might say and whatnot. That could be canon. Whereas eisegesis is, you know what? I believe this because I read this comic book or this role-playing game. And even though it's never been in the episode, it's part of my headcanon. And I firmly believe this. And look, I take this one line that one background person said in this one episode, and I project onto that what I believe. And I think that's where we tend to have a disconnect. I'd like to believe that when you come from a place of exegesis, if you start with what you saw in the episode, we should have a common ground. And then we got to be very accepting of everybody's got their own headcanon. And that's okay too. Again, I don't want to get too much into real world religion, but I think people can see it clearly if you use it as an example. If you have a bunch of Christians, for example, they all agree on certain things that are very clear to them, but then there's little minor things that different denominations believe, and then they butt heads. That's fine. Let's agree on the things that we do agree on, and kind of celebrate the things that we disagree with, because I think a common recurring theme with the Klingons and Star Trek in general, but let's focus on the Klingons, is this whole idea that there's conflict and then they come together and then there's conflict again. And then they come together. There's the Civil War. And then after the Civil War, they come back together again. And, you know, now we're seeing Discovery. There's all these different disparate houses and they get unified under Laurel. And I'm sure that this season, there's going to be more conflict between them and so on and so forth.
That's an interesting way to look at it, because like different parts of Christianity look at different ways. And it does, it to me, when you relate that to the Star Trek universe franchise, to me, if people get upset that, like, you know, these aren't the same Klingons I remember, they're not doing this, and goes, well, it's a bit ridiculous that every century Klingons are going to be exactly the same, or even in one time period, they're all going to be the same and believe the same thing. So to me, it's kind of reasonable that they're different.
Sure. And then there's the step out of character point of view, and you look at things and go, well, let's face it, the real reason that there's different Klingons is back in the original series, they weren't spending all that money on foreheads. And then when they had the money, they're slapping foreheads on them. And then when Discovery came out, they wanted to do something different. Well, you know, you can explain it away. You can say, well, there's different Klingons on different worlds and evolution works that way and so on and so forth. But I think there also comes to another element of canon, is where does canon reside? Again, someone will say, well, Gene Roddenberry created it. And then someone else will say, yes, but then it became the ownership of CBS and Paramount, and now they're actually separated. And so that kind of separates the canon. But what it really is I tend to think of canon as more of a zeitgeist. It really resides within the fandom. It's a living, breathing thing that, yeah, I mean, we just talked about how fans don't agree, but when fans do agree, they own that canon. And I think, I'm just speculating, because I don't know anything. I'm a fan just like anybody else. But when I watch season one of Discovery and I see the promos for season two, I can't help but think some of the things they're changing, some of the changes they made season one mid-season, and some of the things I see coming up for season two seem to be in direct response to the fans. I think the fans really do kind of steer the rudder a little bit, because they're the consumer.
I think a real world example of what you're talking about is, you've got the rite of ascension you're doing a ceremony that every Klingon is supposed to go through to become the warrior mm-hmm. that's inside him. Klingon fandom has developed a stage play, the Klingon yes. Christmas Carol, that wraps that as the central theme and expresses other ideas mm-hmm. through the course of, what is it, 90 minutes long?
Something like that, yeah.
But that's the core of that particular stage play is, I can't pronounce their Scrooge's name.
Scrooge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scrooge. He didn't go through it, and now the ghosts are coming to him mm-hmm. to explain why he should.
I love that example. We do a lot of discussion within the monastery and within the circles of fans that like to talk about these things. Especially when you start reading some of the books, I think a lot of the writers tend to think about this and they go, you know what? You can draw the parallel between the warriors of the Klingon Empire and the Shogun of Japan. There's this idea that everybody's a warrior, but that's not really the case. You know, I mean, you can analogize the warrior mentality to the businessman and so forth. But, you know, when you start getting into the grocer and the chef and the artist, do they really follow that warrior spirit? Yeah, maybe they go to, they participate in ceremonies and they believe in a Klingon afterlife and so forth. But, you know, that I suspect that they may be more inclined to kind of pay lip service to what it means to be a warrior or take it more as a concept, not quite literally, you know? So when
actually looking at Day of Honor,
yeah.
book four of the Day of Honor series, mm-hmm. the farmers
yep.
have the warrior ethos as they tackle the land to pull a crop from it.
Yeah. And maybe I put a little too much emphasis by drawing the comparison to a Japanese mindset, but that is very in keeping with this idea that, you know, I work for the betterment of the empire. You know, I contribute in that way. I may not be the guy that goes out on a ship and fights the enemy on the front lines, but I'm supporting them by growing the crops or raising the livestock that feeds them or feeds the next generation that's going to go out and fight on the front lines and so forth. So yeah, there's definitely that.
See, I always think of it as not so much a shogun as a Viking culture.
Sure. I see that too.
The Vikings would go Viking. It's actually a verb.
Yes.
They would go out and do their pillaging and whatever to bring revenue back for their village during the off times from when they're not doing the farming or the tending or whatever.
Right. I actually, and again, I guess I put the focus on Japan because I know more about the culture. I don't know as much about Vikings. I love the fact that Viking is a verb. Kind of wish Klingon was a verb because just the Klingon language is so action-based. But, you know, then there all the Klingon jokes would come, and that would be bad.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking a bit about canon. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to, the ways of Kalis. Where can people go to learn about them?
Well, you almost can't separate that from canon, can you? I suppose it depends on what you put in your hierarchy. I would say that there's definitely some episodes that are worth watching. That would be the first thing, because I tend to classify those as your alpha canon, your primary canon. But then there are some books. And again, anyone you talk to, I think there's a good agreement that books would be a definite secondary canon.
They get a chance to go deeper into whatever they're talking about.
They do, but they do tend to be more of that eisegesis, a writer bringing their own ideas and thoughts that may or may not stick in the canon, so to speak. It just depends on whether or not the fans pick it up and run with it. So, for example, someone pointed this out to me, and it took me a while to really get my head around it and accept it, but it's true. The Klingon language itself, everything that Mark Okrand puts into those books, is technically non-canon until it's actually used in an episode. But I do think that the creators and the writers and the current producers and so forth pretty much keep the language in high regard. So I'm not too concerned about that. But I'll tell you, if you want to learn a culture, if you want to learn the way of the warrior, as you put it, the way of Kalis, there's no better way than to learn the language. Don't get me wrong. I am by no means fluent in Klingon, but I am studying it.
Well, Mark and Robert O'Reilly did a panel at Starbase Indy where they were literally talking about the fact that Mark could come up with a word, the writers could put a word in the script. The word's pronunciation was not established until the first actor pronounced it.
Yeah.
In fact, Robert was saying that he didn't recognize his own character's name when they called him because he had been told it was going to be this. Uh-huh. And when it came time for him to be on set, another actor had pronounced it differently. So he didn't think it was his name.
Well,
now Mark has gone ahead and addressed that problem in Klingon for the Galactic Traveler.
Yep.
By saying there are dialects within Kronos that everybody says the language slightly differently.
So, of course, the Klingon language being Klingon whole, right? It's funny, I've been to many of the Kep'a, the big meetings every year.
For those that aren't aware of it, that's the Klingon Language Institute's annual get-together,
right,
where they talk about the language, find new things to do with the language, and propose new words to Mark to put into the language.
Exactly. And so one of the phrases that they have is, so you have Klingon whole, which is the Klingon language, and you'll often hear people that are fluent in the language refer to Paramount whole. the language that sometimes creeps in from a writer who didn't really do their homework on the language and kind of threw something together and, you know, bad translation. And that's like you said, Mark, saying, well, it's a dialect or it's an old style or whatever. It existed, it happened. But this is the right way to say it.
In fact, they've taken that a step further with Discovery in that the Klingon Language Institute person who goes through the script, makes sure the language is correct, records the dialogue to give to the actors so the actors can learn how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Not like it was in the earlier days where the writers were writing a word that the actors could figure out how to pronounce.
Right. You know, whatever you feel about Discovery, the language is spot on. That part of it, I feel awesome about. I guess it helps that the fact that I know the people that are actually involved in the translation and the coaching, but it's absolutely true. That's reinforced for me by the actors themselves when they're at conventions or on their social media when they're talking about the language and they're like showing this reverence for it. And they're like, I want to get this right. I struggle to make sure that I get this right because I know you guys will notice and care. That I feel awesome about. There's a podcast. This is me being a fuddy-duddy and not knowing the modern technological terminology. It's a YouTube channel, and I'm not going to mention who it is, but they do a lot of Star Trek analyses and stuff. And they're really good for things like the ships and technical things, but they like to pick apart the way the language is spoken in Discovery. And it makes me so angry. They make fun of the one character, Tyler, when he says Kalish. Well, he's pronouncing it correctly. You know, that capital S at the end is not quite an English SH, but it's very close. It's very similar to an SH. And to say Kalis is just not correct, just because that's how it was said in the original series before there was a language put together. You know, it's kind of like, you know, throwing in a y'all there somewhere. Anyway, that's my take on it. And that's the kind of thing that grinds my gears as a fan.
We're talking about the language defining right. culture. And I think one of the really good examples of that for those aren't experts or even users of Klingon Hall is the Klingon word for hello. It doesn't mean hello.
Well, that's right. Whenever you go to Duolingo or something, and again, I want to preface this, please. I am a beginner. I am a member of the Klingon Language Institute, but that means nothing. I am first year freshman, okay?
It means you get access to some of the extra features.
Yeah, it does.
And, yeah, I'm
and
really new at it.
Exactly. And you know, you should really, if you haven't already, definitely get some of the people like Chris and Jeremy who are really, really fluent to talk more about it. But in general, whenever you go to Duolingo or you see some web page that has, you know, useful Klingon phrases, it'll give you hello. And the translation it gives is Nuknech, which absolutely does not mean hello in any, it can be considered a greeting, but it's not something you would say when you enter a Klingon shop and go Nuknech. It's what the shopkeeper would say to you. What do you want? That's literally what it means.
Which gives you an idea of how different the language is, the thinking behind having that type of a language, the warrior mentality to that type of language. Let's get down to business.
Right. And it's absolutely not rude to just walk up to someone and say, I want this. Give it to me now. That's perfectly acceptable.
Almost polite.
Another thing that you would see on one of those kind of translation matrices would be a translation for thank you, Quatlo. Okay. Well, technically, you could translate that as I thank you, but Klingon being the active language it is, that wouldn't mean a lot to a Klingon. I assume that your average Klingon that deals with the Federation on a regular basis and understands, you know, some kind of interaction kind of gets, they just like to say thank you. It's part of their tradition. But if a Klingon were to use Quathlo, they would say something more than I thank you. They would say, I thank you by doing this thing because you have honored me. There's more that has to go into it. Just saying thank you means nothing. It's got to be followed up with something. That's where the Quathlo part comes from.
Getting back then to the ways of Kalis.
Yes.
We were talking about recommended episodes or things that people could do to learn the ways. We've covered language, so what else could they do?
Right. So actually, before we leave the language, and we were talking about suggested reading, I did want to go back that there are some of the language books that really do get into the culture without bogging you down too much with the language. If you just want to read about the culture and just have the language as a side thing, books like Klingon for the Galactic Traveler and The Klingon Way, those are definitely language books, but there's a lot more understandable English description of culture that people would really enjoy, really get a lot out of.
You mentioned The Klingon Way. That's a really good book.
Mm-hmm.
Mark pulled the Klingon sayings out of the TV series and talked about them and what they meant.
Exactly. And so now that makes a great segue back into the show. So when you think about the original series, you think about episodes like Day of the Dove, you have Trouble with Tribbles, you've got Yesterday's Child, just every episode that had the Klingons in it. Not very meaty, but there were phrases that came out of there that did become, as you said, translated back into Klingon, so to speak, by Dr. Okrand, because they do convey that Klingon mindset that all of this lore was predicated on. you know, obviously I would always encourage people go back and consume those Klingon episodes of the original series if they're just starting out in fandom.
We really started developing more of the Klingon mythos in Next Generation and especially DS9. So keep going. Don't just stop with the original series.
No. Absolutely. I'm just saying that's where you would start. We obviously hit on some key ones already for Next Generation. You mentioned Rightful Heir. Oh, actually, we alluded to it. I don't think we mentioned it by name. Rightful Heir. That's the episode where we get the monastery and the clerics, and we see the return of Kalish. You have Firstborn. You have, or was that a Deep Space Nine episode? I may be mixing them up.
I believe that was Next Gen. Alexander was mostly in Next Gen.
Yes. So that's right. It was Alexander, Firstborn. You have
Alexander was Worf's son for our listeners.
Exactly. You have what was the? I'm drawing a blank on the name of the episode.
Describe it. One of us might know.
Oh yeah, the one where there's the exchange. Riker's on the Klingon ship.
I know which one you're talking about.
Oh, the one with Riker on the ship or the one with Kirk?
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Especially since that particular episode goes on to generate three more books by Keith DeCentio.
A Matter of Honor.
Right. A Matter of Honor. That one is great because it gives you some insight into as he interacts with the Klingons on that ship, you have the one Klingon who talks about how his father is waiting to die and has brought shame to the family and how that impacts him. But he's your father. Well, you know, that means something very different to a Klingon than it does to you and so forth. You know, how you go about establishing your place on the ship and demanding respect on a Klingon ship and so forth, the interactions between them and so forth.
Separately or both of them at the same time?
Exactly. Excellent. And boy, that idea that even when they realize he's making a bit of a joke, humor, that kind of camaraderie, you know, is
they accept him at that point.
Exactly. And even at the end, when he, you know, allows the captain to take command back from him. And, you know, that the other Klingon looks at him and says, wow, you really do understand our ways. And you get the impression that even as he leaves the ship, there's that respect that he's built up with the other Klingons. So you've got that. You've got Sins of the Father.
The sister. Oh. Episode to that Sins of the Father where Worf's brother shows up and is the first officer for a bit. That's also a good episode too.
Exactly. The emissary that, you know, starts the whole Alexander story, you know, at least his inception, so to speak. Reunion, redemption, definitely redemption. I mean, that's a two-parter. That's some good meaty Klingon lore there.
Heart of Glory.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, going back to early Next Gen, some of those lines you have to take with a grain of salt, because I'm pretty sure that's the episode that suggests that the Klingon Empire was now part of the Federation, and they kind of walked that back in later seasons. So I'd say that's one of those examples of canon that you kind of have to reconcile with other parts of canon, so to speak.
It's that part of canon where we're going to toy with this idea, try to get things started, try to look at the Klingons, but we haven't really written the Bible yet, so nothing's etched in stone.
Exactly. And I'd say that also goes back to the whole idea about, well, Gene Roddenberry created it, so he's the top say. Well, not really, because he was the one who wanted the Klingons to be part of the Federation, and they kind of walked that back. So even what Gene Roddenberry wants doesn't always stay canon.
Oh, yeah, and that's not the only example of Gene Roddenberry contradicting his own canon.
No, you're absolutely right about that. There are a lot of other next gens. I'd say the other big one, the two-parter Birthright, is another. In fact, you know what? As Next Gen and Deep Space Nine got further along, I tend to say usually the later episodes. All of season 6 and 7 of Deep Space Nine. I'm not even going to mention every episode in Deep Space Nine, you know?
Like you said, that season 6, there are lots of different episodes in to give you different pieces of the culture. Yeah. There are two different wedding ceremonies in that season and a divorce ceremony.
Absolutely right. And that's exactly the kind of thing that we tend to chew on a lot in the monastery, because when you come to me and you say, I want to renew my vows with my wife and we want to do it in Klingon fashion, I go, well, which version? There's one version where you don't need anybody. You just go and you slap each other around and it's done, you know, and that you should really keep private, to be honest. And then there's the big, but what most people usually mean is that long drawn out ceremony that you see in You Are Cordially Invited, which when you really start getting into the nitty gritty of it, if you really want to put that ceremony on, remember that ceremony was meant to take place in about 10 minutes of a 50 minute episode, you know? So it just doesn't really take that long. So you really need to think through what you want to bulk up, what you want to focus on. I would encourage, if you're doing it as part of a weekend convention, that you do the whole initial day before, where the guys get together and the food's on the table, but you don't touch it, and you share stories of combat, and you know, I mean, it's about playing it up. It's about interacting. It's about, how did you put it earlier? Kind of a theater of the mind kind of thing. Have fun with it. That's what's really important.
And another great thing about these series is a lot of times throughout the series, you see things like in You're Cordially Invited, in that ceremony, there's a lot of Klingon lore packed into that ceremony. The entire thing I've done with Klingon speed dating or Klingon courtship rituals comes from a couple of lines that Worf says to Wesley Crusher in Next Generation.
Right. You're exactly right. And that actually, that whole marriage ceremony in You Are Cordially Invited gives us the lore of the Klingon creation myth, a much more detailed, in-depth version, which, of course, you see if you read the Pakbat
Book of Honor.
Yeah, the Klingon epic. I don't want to call it the Klingon Bible, although that's what a lot of people tend to refer to it as. Written by a couple of Swedish guys, and I'm not going to try to even get their pronunciations of their names, but it was translated by Mark Okrin, so we know that the Klingon's good. Yeah, this whole idea of the Klingon hearts, the first Klingons, which of course we find out even more about when we get into the Barge of the Dead in Voyager, and we start talking about the Klingon afterlife and what became of that first Klingon.
What he's referring to is there are a couple of episodes in Star Trek Voyager that are very good Klingon lore episodes.
Right. Like I started on was Barge of the Dead. The other being Prophecy, which starts taking the lore in what you could consider to be a more denominational or a different sect of belief, where they start talking about the Kuvama. And boy, if you really want to take lore out to its extent, you know, go from beta canon to, you know, gamma canon, so to speak, Star Trek Online has taken the story of the Prophecy and the Kuvama and done this whole very, very interesting time travel story involving Miral Torres, and you can think of it as a sequel to that episode. Lots of great stuff. Take it with a grain of salt, because it's not necessarily canon in terms of the show, but it's great for headcanon. It's definitely good for your eisegesis, you know, point of view sort of canon.
Well, speaking of that, then, how does Clerics of the Empire feel about the video game Klingon?
Ah, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's right on my list of right with the books. It's in there with, because if you think about it, it's not quite an episode. It's not actually a Next Generation episode, but it so much has that feel. You know, it was written by the people that wrote the Next Generation episodes. It was, I believe it was directed by Jonathan Frakes, wasn't it?
Yes, it was directed by Jonathan Frakes, and Robert O'Reilly played Gowron in it.
He reprises his role of Gowron, and there's actually a lot of the people playing Klingons in there play other Klingons in other Next Gen episodes. And oh, absolutely. I think some of them,
oh yeah, they're all recognizable,
are using the exact same foreheads, even if they're not playing the same character. So for your listeners who might not be aware of it, because this is was that 1998 or something like that came out?
For those listeners that aren't familiar with it, Bound by Honor has reviewed the book that was made from it.
There you go. And to be honest, if you want, I know that people have taken that video game, it's basically what it is, a video game, kind of a more like these days you'd think of it as a DVD extra kind of thing, where you take an episode and you make choices, kind of like an old twist a plot, but it is a video game. And there's people that have posted it on YouTube where they've strung it together as a single 1 hour episode, and you totally can watch it, and you kind of get that. The whole backstory behind it is you're just a Federation officer, point of view Federation officer, who goes into the holodeck, who wants to learn about Klingon culture. You meet a holographic representation of Gowron, and he leads you on a holographic adventure where you become a Klingon boy who's becoming a man, goes through his age of ascension, and immediately has to undergo a quest to find the treacherous Targ that killed your father. And
the really cool part is that the game is almost a sequel to the book, because in the book Riker talks about Gowron should turn the story into a training simulation, and then you got the game where it is.
I love that kind of meta story. You know, it kind of makes you believe it does exist within, you know, the canon. So you know that the character you play, I think it's
Pa.
Pa is, you know, even within the canon of Star Trek, is a fictional character that you play, but the cultural aspects and elements are totally valid. And some of it was drawn directly from the show. Other parts of it have worked its way into canon then. There are things that have come from that game that were mentioned in the old role-playing games. They talk about the Black Fleet. Well, the Black Fleet has now specifically been canonized in Star Trek Discovery. It was kind of sort of, you know, canonized in the Warrior's Anthem in Next Generation, which refers to the Black Fleet. But now on the show, we have establishment of the Black Fleet as being part of this afterlife belief, going back to what I was talking about, how fans get an idea that they all kind of agree on, and some writer goes, oh, I thought that always was canon, and they work it into a story because it just works so well. As we continue on with our talk about episodes to look at, and you look at Enterprise, boy, you really can't help but look at what was the name of the episode? Was it Contagion?
Yeah, that was one of the two. I forget what the other one was called.
Where they finally canonized the whole explanation for why the original series Klingons had smooth heads and all the other Klingons had ridges.
Personally, I like the explanation they used in More Troubles, More Trouble.
I honestly did too, and most fans did. It was, we don't discuss it with people on the outside. However,
I've used that line in some panels when they've been trying to go on a different direction with something, and I come back with, we don't talk about that.
And that is an excellent thing to do when you don't want to be pinned down to taking a stand on canon, because, you know, that if you're on a panel, the people that are questioning you are looking at you as though you're some sort of an authority. And let's face it, we don't represent Paramount. We can't take that level of authority. The best that we can do is exactly what you say. Well, we don't discuss it with outsiders.
The two episodes are Affliction and Divergent.
Thank you. Affliction was the episode I was trying to think of. But a key episode that gives us, we finally, after 30 years, we had an explanation. And then comes Discovery, but that's a whole other topic.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily not still in canon.
No, it absolutely is. You're absolutely right. It is. It's just now we have new matters of canon to deal with.
And you know what? There's several reasons why Klingons could look like that. Botched surgery. Maybe they tried to reverse the augmentation and it got worse.
So one of the discussions that I was involved with, someone was talking about the previews. And if you haven't seen the previews for season two of Discovery, definitely check them out. They're out on YouTube. And I don't think I'm spoiling anything. These are all part of the spoilers or part of the.
I wouldn't say anything in a trailer is not a spoiler.
You know what? Unfortunately,
especially since you've got a lot of people out there that have taken the trailers and picked them apart scene by scene,
shared them on social media. Yeah. And so that's what I was going to get into. So we have these pictures of the Klingons with hair, and they look much more like the Klingons we know. We see Laurel, and she is, I'm sorry, I'm just going to say she's beautiful. She really is.
Now, that's the one picture that got leaked by somebody, and it was by her.
Well, it was actually leaked by her, yeah, on her social media. And I don't blame her for being proud of it. But that's the image that I wanted to address, because someone that was picking it apart was saying, well, yeah, look what they've done. Not only did she grow her hair out, but they've changed her makeup. They've softened her face a little bit. And where's her scar?
Oh, that's a good question.
And someone else said, well, come on. We're talking about the same Klingon house that turned a full-on albino Klingon into a human.
Oh, yeah.
You think it's really tough for them to fix her scar, soften her features, and change some things below the neckline too? I mean, absolutely, it's possible.
You know, I didn't even really think about it, because so often they'll just airbrush stuff in trailers so you can't hide spoilers. I didn't really think about the fact that she didn't have her scar.
Yep. Oh yeah, the fans have been all over that, because there's in the trailer, not the picture that she shared, because she shared like almost a full-on front picture with this beautiful dress that,
yeah, I've seen that one.
I'm gonna try and recreate that for my wife. But there's a close-up shot in the second trailer where the color is off because there's a lighting effect going on, but you can clearly see that there is no scar on the left side of her face. And that actually caused a lot of fans to speculate, is that even Laurel? Maybe it's not Laurel because it's, you know, there's no scar. Yep, that's, now we know that's Laurel.
Or her evil twin.
Oh yeah, or the mirror universe, or oh. I mean, not to get off on another talk about canon, but I'm seeing people picking apart the trailer because Spock has a beard, and the only bearded only bearded Vulcan we saw was in the mirror universe, which isn't true, obviously.
Didn't Cybok have a beard?
Cybok had a beard, but people like to forget about him. There's actually a lot of Klingons, especially background characters, that we've seen with beards. So we know Klingons can grow beards. It's not just a mirror universe thing.
I think you mean Vulcans can grow beards. I'm sitting here going, all the Klingons have beards.
I'm sorry, yeah.
I was just thinking that too.
This is, I gotta be honest with you, when it comes to canon, I just don't care about anything but the Klingons. I just don't. People are talking about Federation uniforms and Vulcan beards, and I'm like, I don't, all I care about is the Klingons, you know? And if I'm upset about anything about the Klingons, at least I can rely on the fact that the language sounds spot on to me, you know, but that's why I do the Klingon thing. And I don't dress up in orange or red, blue and yellow pajamas, you know?
So what other books would you recommend for people to read to pick up on Klingons?
Sure. So besides those language books that I mentioned, I would definitely recommend, I'm going to recommend one by John Ford, but not the one you think. The Hand of Kalish, John M. Ford and Michael Jan Friedman. Excellent book.
Actually, that's two books. Michael.
You're right. It's a series. You're absolutely right.
No. It's not a series. It's a compilation. It's two books. It's The Final Reflection and Kalis.
There you go. Okay, that's right. That's right. Oh, that's why it's by John Ford and Michael Jan Friedman.
And if anybody's curious about The Final Reflection, that's the first book we reviewed on Bound by Honor.
There you go. And that's another one where you get a flavor, but you got to take it with a grain of salt because there's been a lot of things that have been offset by primary alpha canon. But you know what? If that's part of your head canon and that's what you love, definitely dig into it because there are some really good kernels of Klingon spirit there. Another trilogy of stories of books are the ICAST Gorkon books. That's A Good Day to Die, Honor Bound, and Enemy Territory. Those are by Keith
DeChantio.
Thank you very much. I was drawing a blank.
And A Burning House, I believe, is the title of a direct sequel to that trilogy.
Right. I've got that one. I haven't read it yet. It's on my reading list.
Same characters, continuing out the plot line.
As I recall, one of the main characters is that Klingon that I referred to that became friends with Riker.
Captain Clegg is the captain of the Paw. I'm sorry, captain of the Gorkon. He's from the Paw.
In that episode where Captain Clegg, that's right. He had served on the Paw with Riker. That's right. And I only remembered that because I had the Star Trek customizable card game with his picture on it. Another great one, at least I've heard it's great. I haven't read it yet, but I do have it and haven't read it yet. The Left Hand, books one and two. The Left Hand of Destiny. I believe those are by J.G. Herzer, right?
Yeah, I think he helped write them. He wrote them with somebody else.
Okay. Haven't read them yet, but I've heard good things. I'm definitely going to check that out. Now, this is not what you'd call so much a novel or a storybook, but it's still excellent cultural reference. The Klingon Empire. By who is this?
Dayton Ward. We just reviewed that.
Dayton Ward. Exactly. It reads like
a travel guide.
Exactly. Like something you'd pick up if you were going on vacation to the Klingon homeworld. Much like several of the books that we talked about that Mark Okrand put out. I mentioned earlier the Pak Bat. The Klingon Epic, that one you should be able to find on Amazon. Very interesting the way it's packaged. It's a very, very plain cover, very black and white, just the title, the author's name, and the translator on the front, in just how you'd expect a Klingon book to look. And I would call it an incomplete Klingon epic. It's as though they were translating a scroll that has pieces missing. And that's basically because they didn't want to fill in too many blanks. But I would say I have recommended it. If you want to play the role of the cleric on your ship, that one is almost mandatory reading.
It's written like an epic poem. And if you get your hands on the book, as you open the book up, one page is in Klingon, the other page is in English.
Which is true of most of the Klingon translations. If you go out and you get Much Ado About Nothing, Hamlet, if you support
Gilgamesh,
they all have, on the one side, they have the Klingon, and on the other side, they have the in quotes, English translation. So those are the big ones. Did you have some others that you want? Oh, we already mentioned the Klingon Way and Klingon for the Galactic Traveler. But those definitely fall in there. Those are the big ones that I had on my list as far as books go. Did you have any others?
Not really a book, but I'd suggest The Light of Kalis, the IDW comic series.
Oh, okay. I didn't even know about that. I'll have to check that out.
It's the first Discovery comic series.
Yeah, yeah. And then kind of right in there with books. They're not books, but they're the games. The Star Trek Klingon from 96, Simon and Schuster.
Oh, that is amazing.
And then kind of a follow-up to it. No, not really. Not at all. But as a game goes, in 2000, there was the Klingon Academy. All of the backstory to that, my understanding, it was written by DC Fontana, believe it or not. But that's Interplay Entertainment. Kind of almost a sequel to Star Trek VI.
Oh, really?
It's told from the point of view. Yeah, or excuse me, a prequel to Star Trek VI. It's written kind of from the point of view of another Klingon first person that is serving under Chang. And Chang is...
The only thing I've seen on that, and it is out on YouTube, is General Chang's address to the cadets of the academy.
Yep. Oh, that's awesome. If you can't get a hold of the game and a legacy system to play it on, then I would encourage people check it out on YouTube. All those big cut scenes are there. There's this great scene of battle where a boarding party comes aboard and Chang has to fight somebody hand to hand. It shows how he lost his eye, you know. It's very, very, very interesting. I would encourage anybody to check that out. And that game leads me to the next area I wanted to talk about. The music from that game was composed by, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, Enon Zur, I believe, who's done a lot of music for different games. That music is very much inspired by that Klingon piece from the motion picture. You should be able to find it out on the interwebs, the music from Klingon Academy. If you can find like MP3s of it and write it to a disc, it's an awesome Klingon soundtrack, absolutely worth having. So I would encourage anyone, even beyond the reading and the episodes and the games and so forth, the music can really inspire that feeling. Anyone who's ever heard of Il Troubadour, there's a group of musicians out there that perform as Klingons and play Klingon music. They even performed the music at the wedding ceremony I was telling you about here in the Chicago area years ago.
They've got a few CDs out.
They do. I've got them all. Definitely. If you can get them, get them. Of course, CAG's own Klingon pop warrior, Jen Bohm, she's got two albums out. I believe they're both still available if you get in touch with her. And I hope I'm not betraying anything by mentioning I hear she's putting out a third one. She's getting ready to do that.
No, I was going to say, I thought she was working on more tunes.
Yep. She celebrated Hitlope with me a couple weeks ago, and she said she's gearing up. She's planning on it. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Well, these kind of things that people are doing, like the music stuff, kind of segues us into activities.
Sure.
What would you recommend people try doing to celebrate Klingon culture?
I can definitely tell you what I've done, and I can make a lot of suggestions, but my first suggestion would be do what I did. What part of fandom do you enjoy? What fires you up? What is it about the Klingons that you enjoy? Find your own way to do something with that. I chose this, you know, monastic, clerical, cultural thing, but maybe that's not what you're into. I know that there's a guy who's local here who's really into martial arts. He picked up a book that is almost impossible to find now, The Secret Fighting Arts of a Warrior Race. It was put out without a license, so it was shut down. But there are copies of it out there, and he studied the combat in it, and he really gets into that. And I know that there's groups that do like tournament you know, Botleth tournaments using blunted weapons and padding and stuff like that. If that's your thing, you know, definitely go for it. Be safe, but go for it. Study the language. That's always a great thing. I happen to live in the Midwest, so I often am within hours of where they have the Tepa every year. And when time is available to me, I can get the time off of work, I go to that. In your own homes, do things on a regular basis with your ship. If you're a ship of one, then you need to be recruiting. But if you are blessed like me to have a full-on complement, try to find something to do monthly. Dig into things like what are the Klingon holidays that we've read about in the books or that we've seen in these episodes, and celebrate them. I'm going to be talking more about that in the Klingon culture group, talking about the different holidays. I know that some other Klingons have been asking me, what are the holidays and when are they? Well, when are they is a little bit more difficult, but I can tell you what the holidays are and when they are described as happening, and if we can decide as a fandom when to celebrate them. So, for example, from one of Dr. Okrin's books, I believe it's The Klingon Way, he talks about a holiday called Chitlop. And it's a holiday that he describes as being very much like a Memorial Day or an Armed Forces Day, celebrating the military. And it takes place in the 10th Klingon month. Well, here on Earth, the 10th month is October. So every year for almost 10 years now, my ship has been celebrating Chitlop at my house sometime during October, usually on a Saturday, just because that's when we can get together, with a big feast. And that leads me into another thing, food. If language is crucial to culture, then food is just as crucial to culture. My theory on Klingon foods is it needs to look like what you see on the show, but it's still got to be tasty. So I would not try serving up a big dish of worms to people. But I've got an awesome recipe for gach, if anyone's interested, that looks like what you see on the show, but tastes like a wonderful Asian stir fry. So those are some of the things. I can go into more detail if you'd like about different things that I've done, but I would encourage people.
You've talked about doing Klingon wedding ceremonies.
Yes.
What have you tried reenacting any of the other ceremonies at conventions?
At conventions, no. I have done an Age of Ascension ceremony here at my house for someone who was having a birthday. She was just at the right age where I'm like, you know what? It's time for your Age of Ascension. So I put together a bunch of Klingon pain sticks. Again, I would encourage your listeners to be creative. That's what this kind of fandom is all about. Look at the pain sticks you've seen on the show. I happen to have used an idea that someone else suggested, using joy buzzers at the end of your pain stick so that when you put it against someone, it goes bzzz, you know, and you get that little bzzz jolt.
And you don't hurt their brains.
And it doesn't, yeah, you're not using an actual taser and knocking them unconscious for 10 minutes. That kind of ruins the ceremony. But it's still a little jolt that lets you know you just got hit. And I encourage them to recite the Klingon. You know, Worf says it in English in that episode, but I've got a Klingon translation for anyone who needs it.
Yeah, that particular ceremony is all over the internet in both Klingon and English.
Yep, yep. And I am blessed to have some Klingons locally. Jen Bohm is one. Jeremy Cowan is another one, who are very fluent in the language and are more than willing to coach me through my pronunciation so that I don't sound foolish to someone who might actually know what Klingon is supposed to sound like. So those are the only ones that I've had opportunity. Hopefully I don't ever have to, or I'm never called on to do any sort of a funeral ceremony, but I would certainly be willing to do that with respect if somebody needed me to. I feel that, these kinds of things in real world and in fandom are really for us to deal with important moments in our life. And sometimes, you know, the ceremony surrounding death are just as important as how we celebrate life. So, hey, whatever helps somebody, I'm there for them. I just to give you a little bit of personal background, it's this isn't completely out of nowhere. I have some, you know, ministry background and have, you know, been happy to minister to people's needs in, you know, in a true spiritual sense. But, you know, that's not truly what I intend to do as a Klingon, but the idea is still there.
Are there any ceremonies out there that you've seen in canon and in the books that you would like to see somebody try to put on?
Well, actually, you know, you just reminded me, there was the same time that I did that wedding ceremony, we also did a bonding ceremony, you know, with the candles and stuff. And instead of using real candles, we used the kind that have the little switch on them and whatnot. I would love to see that one done by more people. I would love to see people exploring their Klingon house and joining Klingon houses together. Again, that whole idea of unifying. It's very much a part of what Kalesh was all about. And, you know, Worf talks about that with the bonding ceremony of bringing somebody into a Klingon house if they don't already have one, and how that relationship is as good as a blood bond. I really would like to see our fandom doing that a lot more, because I think that fandoms do have a tendency to, like the real world and like politics and religions and so much, can sometimes be a dividing factor. I think it should really be bringing us together. So that's one thing I'd like to see more of.
I think a page for the various houses that have been established within CAG has gone up on the CAG.org site.
And that's a great thing. Someone asked me, someone who does Klingon stuff but is not a member of CAG was asking me about what is canon as far as the houses. And I just said, well, just, you know, look at Memory Alpha. You know, that's the best source for canon references. And whatever is not mentioned, we can fill in all the blanks. I would really caution you against doing that. You know, Star Trek Discovery has, you know, numbered how many houses there were at a particular point in history. And if you just start creating houses, you're just leaving yourself open to, you know, running afoul of that. What I tend to encourage people to do is assume that the canon houses are the great houses. And if you want to say you're a part of that great house, that's fine if that's part of your history. But if you want to have your own house, yeah, you just say it's an offshoot, it's a minor house. If you look at the real world of lineages and royalty and peerage and so forth, you know, there's, oh yeah, I'm a member of the house of, you know, House of Roses, but, you know, it's a very, very small offshoot, and, you know, we emigrated to America and blah, 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 whatever. You know, as long as there's a good story, that's what I would always encourage.
How do people get involved with Clerics of the Empire? What should they do?
Well, like with most things in Klingon, you don't have to necessarily do anything. You just start doing it yourself. But if you want to link up with me and other people that are already doing it, I would encourage you to check out the Facebook page, the CAG Clerics of the Empire. You could just, you know, look that up on Facebook. It's a public group, so you should be able to find it without a problem.
Sean, you'll be able to get that on our links at the bottom, won't you?
Probably.
That would be awesome if you could do that. Also, I'm just starting to get into the CAG webpage itself. There's a CAG culture page. I am planning on sharing a lot of things that I've put up previously in the Facebook page. I'm going to start moving over to the CAG page as well. Some of the things I'll be sharing will be those recipes that I mentioned and the outlines for some of the ceremonies that I've done. And my hope is to get more conversation going about these cultural things. I do encourage people to bring their eisegesis, their headcanon, their own, what they think, and kind of start making us think in ways we haven't thought about before. That is that is the most important part of how you can get involved. As iron sharpens iron, so does one warrior sharpen another. They're bringing something to us if they choose to.
And my thoughts on conventions are, we need to get people out of the chairs. So the more activities that we can develop to do at conventions, you've actually got people doing things,
right,
and less listening to talking heads.
Absolutely. And sometimes that's even what it becomes at conventions. They're always asking you to do panels. And I go, well, I'll do a panel. I'll talk about the language or the culture or whatever. I'm happy to do it. But wouldn't you rather me do something more interesting? Because Klingons are active.
Wouldn't you rather that you showed them something?
Right, exactly. So that's why, you know, we did the bonding ceremony and we did the wedding. And a couple of years, for a lot of years at one of the local conventions, we've been doing the Jail and Bail, which I know a lot of Klingons have done. But then, inspired by Star Trek VI and that one Enterprise episode where we see the Klingon legal system and whatnot, I staged a trial, you know. And one year we were promoting the Klingon Christmas Carol, so we put, I'm drawing a blank, who was it that wrote the A Christmas Carol? Charles Dickens, right. We put Charles Dickens on trial for plagiarizing the Klingon. I felt we got kind of clever with it because we said, did you have an encounter with someone named the Doctor? We're making reference to the Doctor Who episode with Charles Dickens, which would explain how he could have learned of the Klingons and so forth. We did one where we put the holographic image of Sherlock Holmes on trial because it's just what we did. The particular convention was very literary based, so that went really well. So
we did a trial one time where we put J.J. Abrams on trial.
Oh, see, I would love to do that, but that could go so wrong so quickly.
But sometimes that's the fun of it.
It absolutely is. As long as you could keep it lighthearted, as long as, you know, you temper the people that want to get really, really hardline nasty.
Yeah, you got to stay away from those people. And you've got to have something you're leading up to.
A punchline. Yeah, a punchline.
That's a joke ending. Yeah. In our case, it was we called him guilty and sentenced him to directing Star Wars.
Oh, that's brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. No, yeah, I wish I'd seen that. I would encourage more of this kind of thing, more content on the interwebs. If you can, and you can work it out with all the people involved, if you can, you know, film something that you do and share it on YouTube, I think anything that promotes our fandom is always a good thing. You know, I think the language is such great PR for us. I think every show you watch, from Big Bang Theory to NCIS, where they talk about language, someone likes to mention Klingon. Klingon is the go-to for conlangs, and that only serves to help our fandom, to the point that every convention I go to, someone says to me, "Do you speak Klingon?" And I turn to him and I go, "Kisha! Of course I do."
I understand that the Klingon Language Institute has been working with the producers of The Big Bang Theory to get their Klingon correct.
Yes, I have heard that too. And one of the interesting, this is a second or third hand story, so I may not get it exactly right, but my understanding was there was one thing that they translated, and they translated it, they sent them an audio tape so they could hear it, and the actor then presented it and only got about half the phrase out. So it was kind of right, but incomplete. But only those of us that know enough of the language would. Now, I didn't sit there and watch the episode and go, "Hey, he got it wrong." But I did translate it afterwards to figure out that he got it wrong. It was an exercise for me.
So is there anything else we'd like to wrap this up with?
Boy, you know, I just to give everybody a little peek behind the curtain, and how a show like this works, I'm not a politician running for office. So I think it's perfectly okay for me to admit that before the show, you sent me some of the questions you were thinking about asking me. And your suggestion was, and if you want to think of any other topics we can talk about, because I got to fill up my time. And what did I say? I said, you think that I couldn't go on for over an hour about any single one of these items? So what do you think?
And as far as that's concerned, guys, if you're on a panel and the moderator doesn't give you the questions before you start, you got a bad moderator.
I would think so. I mean, because this isn't, like I said, I'm not running for a public office. There isn't anything that you're trying to catch me on. Gotcha. Oh, you don't know this as well as...
No, we're trying to make a great experience for the audience here.
Exactly. But the fact is, I could talk about a lot of these things off the cuff. I did a lot of preparing in advance, and then I just totally threw out my notes and just talked with you. So if you ever want to have me back for another topic... and just choose one and spend the whole hour talking about canon, or just 1 hour talking about Klingon music or something, I'd be happy to do that.
That may be something we're going to have to do in the future, because a lot of the ones we've done up to now for the CAG podcast mm-hmm. have been general mm-hmm. overviews, and we haven't really gone deep into a subject yet.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun listening to you. I feel like I should be getting a pamphlet from you or something about this.
Should I be, like, you know, dressed in my Klingon cleric robe, standing on the corner, handing out a tract? You know, have you, you know, learned the ways of Kalis?
We had talked about doing that at a street event down here in Florida called Sci-Fi Bartow. But instead of cleric garb, we were thinking of headpieces, white dress shirt and black tie.
Yeah, but. You know, then all it takes is the one person that says, are you making fun of my religion?
Well, yes.
Well, as a matter of fact, pretty much making fun of everybody. If I don't offend you, I'm not doing it right. That's the tightrope we unfortunately have to walk these days, right? Because any comedian will tell you, if you're not offending someone, you're not doing it right. But now everyone wants to be offended by every joke that someone makes. So what do you do? You know what? I'm a Klingon. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it good-naturedly. I'm not trying to piss you off, but if you get pissed off, I'm a Klingon and I'm ready for the fight.
Well, I'd like to thank our guest for this evening, Kartan.
Yes.
Thanks for being with us. And for Juvon, I bid all of you listening to us, good night.
Good night, everyone.
Kapla.